This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon and into what stuff means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 16.9 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Elo has been doing touchscreens for 40 years now, way, way before marketers started cooking up phrases like customer engagement technology. Over that time, the company has shipped more than 25 million units, so Elo knows touch and interactive. Based in Silicon Valley, the company has in the last few years made a pretty big push into digital signage, with everything from countertop displays to big 70-inch touchscreens that look like giant tablets. I spoke recently with Neeraj Penzi, the company's VP Product Management for Devices and SaaS Software. We get into a lot of things, including what works and doesn't in interactive design, how Elo differs from touch overlay companies, and why a touchscreen manufacturer developed and now markets device management software. So Neeraj, thank you for joining me. I've known about Elo for a long time. One of the things that I noticed when I walked through the Elo booth at DSE, what struck me is how many displays you guys had and the dimensions and the different types. I think of interactive as primarily being relatively small form factor thing, but from what I'm seeing, you guys have traction and activity going from small tablet size displays all the way up to very, very large displays.
Yeah, actually. So thanks, David. Thank you for having me. You know, one of the first things that people notice about us is actually how broad our product portfolio is in the interactive display segment. We're currently offering 7 to 70 inches and all popular sizes in between for interactive displays. And really that, and the reason for that is that we address so many use cases, from basic transactional to these awesome experiences brands want to create. And that really reflects in our breadth of portfolio.
What's had the most traction? If I'm remembering correctly, I think QSR and the self-ordering kiosk was something that was just really going for you guys.
And it still is. Yeah, that's absolutely the current growing use case. So if you think about all the QSR brands, they all either are deploying or evaluating interactive solutions to really not just transactions, but also create a more customer-friendly experience. And you know, what's different right now in the QSR world versus prior attempts at kiosks and things like that is businesses seem to be right now focused on how do I create a richer experience for my customer? How do I bring my interaction with my customer in the current millennium? And that was really not the case in the past. In the past, it was about automating a transaction. And right now, what we see interactivity doing is it's about improving the quality of the relationship with the customers. So your app on your phone, when you do a mobile order or a web order, that interface looks exactly the same as when you walk into a restaurant. And it just speaks to the way I think the current consumer wants to interact with businesses. So that's going really well, but that's not the only place. We have so many different areas where this same trend keeps repeating itself, so to speak. And there's all industries outside of quick serve, in general in retail, but even outside of retail, we see this interactive technology deployed to improve the conversation between businesses and their customers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I would imagine through the years, that's been a big part of what Elo has had to do when it's working with not only end users, but also, you know, your channel partners and solutions providers and so on, is teaching them to really think about the user experience. Because God knows we've all been in front of interactive screens and been completely lost as to what to do, what's involved, did I get this right, all those sorts of things. And it creates a lot of nervous energy and I suspect scares a lot of people off.
Yeah, absolutely. No. So from being in so many different fields, from healthcare to industrial to retail, we just, over time, the company's DNA has been kind of very consultative with our enterprise customers. So if you look at our interactions with our customers, they're really about their goals and their processes. We're almost always talking to our customers, our end customers, about what's possible and what has worked, what things worked in other industries, which is something that our end customers are super interested in. And then we depend upon our partner network really to deliver that solution, right? So our software vendor partners, our integration partners, resellers, and so on. It really takes a large group of people to execute a large project. And our end user conversations are all around the process and how we meet their goals on there, whether it's a transaction thing or whether it's a factory or whether it's a store. And then we use primarily our partners who hold us responsible to make sure that the devices and the products we sell are greatest specs and the price is appropriate on those kinds of things. So you kind of see this duality of our marketing motions.
What defines a great customer experience when they are working with, let's say, a self-service display of some kind?
You know, it really depends upon the use case. But I'll hazard an answer just because I think we can think about QSR or some retail examples. And if you think about those, the best interactive experiences are those that are incredibly friendly and have a specific set of goals for the business and for the customers. Too often, we see interactive projects turning into kind of some really large, oh, yes, we want to achieve this with our marketing goals. We want to be able to run transactions. We want to be able to do loyalty program connects. And the scope becomes so large and you end up with a complex solution. Mm-hmm. So our approach most often is to say, hey, let's look at what's an experience that has a solid business case and as few a set of goals as possible so that it can be delivered in a manner that customers are going to adopt naturally. And this natural fit in the environment and with the language that the customers and businesses are already speaking is so critical. We see a lot of successful implementations of interactive when it naturally fits in the environment. And it's not something that's a big thing on the side, as opposed to something that fits in the processes that the customers have. But, you know, like I started saying in the beginning, it's so different every single time. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we talk about signage, there is some consistency across, I think, use cases. But as soon as you throw in that little piece of glass that senses touch, it turns from signage into experience. And that's what Elo does, is we help our customers build experiences that allow new ways to connect with their customers. So that just kind of makes it different and case by case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've certainly found when I look around retail in particular or places like mass transit, you will see people lining up to buy tickets and do things, even though there are self-service stations nearby. And I've seen this at hotels too for automated check-in. And you know, I try to use them and they're convoluted, they're confusing and everything else. And you finally get through it and realize this didn't actually work. And then you have to go stand in a line and the whole bit. So it can fail so easily and go so badly for people if they present something as a mechanism to make their journey, whatever they're doing, faster, better, or easier. And it ends up just being frustrating.
And so many times you see that, right? You just mentioned some examples. But if you look at some of the newer examples, in quick serve restaurants, I'll take that example because there's some new activity happening. You actually see opposite trend. We're also seeing some stores that are doing, instead of a cash register kind of traditional checkout, they're transitioning to a more self-service checkout solution. And traditional self-service checkouts, you know, we've seen them in grocery stores and in home improvement stores and things like that. But when things like clothing stores and more smaller format stores, we're starting to see a complete reversal of that trend where people actually traditionally would say, oh, wait, I'll just go to the point of sale terminal because I think I can get through faster rather than fiddling with the self-serve. I think people are slowly starting to self-select. And that goes back to the ease and consistency of experience because they're already kind of starting to get used to the mobile apps and the websites. Mm-hmm. And if you make that experience in the store technology consistent in terms of the design language and branding and so on, then that causes a fantastic alignment with what customers expect. So what I do at home when I browse the website or maybe when I go mobile order versus when I go and interact in a store, in a restaurant, if those things are the same or very similar, that drives a lot of ease of that interaction. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that. And that's why mobile architecture is making its way in a big way into business systems. Would like to think we're actually driving that transition, but we've seen this in the last 4 years that mobile architecture for fixed business systems, especially for interacting with customers, is something that's a big trend happening in retail right now.
I would imagine at some point in the last few years, as mobile architecture really sort of evolved and developed, that there would have been strategy meetings around Elo wondering, okay, are we going to be kind of parsed out of the technology conversation for things like retail because people will just use their smartphones and store associates and other people will have smartphones and tablets. We don't need larger interactive screens, whether they're 11 inches or 70 inches. But it doesn't seem like it's going to go that way, but I'm sure it was a fear or concern at some point.
Oh, absolutely. We just don't call them strategy meetings at Elo. Anything we label strategy meetings, we kind of steer away from. We're just product geeks talking about technology trends.
You're just making things up as you go?
No, not really making things up as we go, but we're not doing a big strategy. We're actually saying, hey, what do customers need? Where do we see? And thinking about it a lot more simply than the product portfolio strategy team or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that Elo does, I think, really well, that even though we're a bigger and global company, our customer intimacy is just incredible. And we're a very flat organization. And that just gives us nimbleness. And that's kind of where I chuckle a little bit when you said product strategy. But, you know, frankly, Dave, what has happened is mobile has just made the entire population incredibly comfortable with interacting with businesses through technology, to the point that now people actually expect that as the primary medium. But mobile phones are in your pockets and they are completely driven. What you do with your mobile phone is completely driven by you. And businesses are starting to realize that, wait, I can do this through a mobile app, but what if nobody downloads my app, right? Mm-hmm. How many retail brand apps you have on your phone? I have probably one or two.
I've got my bank and that'd be it.
There you go. But what if a business wants to strike a conversation? Well, the first step to striking a conversation is please download my app. Well, that kind of stops right there because there's very few. But what interactive technology does is it creates the first connect. So when you go into a store and you see, and then potentially there is a call to action, if you will, to take that relationship. When you convert that hello into a relationship, then mobile is appropriate. But to say the hello, you need some other piece of technology. And that's what we found is mobile architecture became incredibly aligned with what we've been doing. And that's why we've experienced all this growth in the past few years.
What's been the use case for the larger displays going all the way up to a 70-inch? Is it things like wayfinding directories?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So wayfinding is big for large format displays. We sell probably, if I were to list out the top few applications, this would be probably number two or number three application.
Okay.
But a lot of the times, what you see people doing with large format is creating a brand experience or a product selection experience. I'll give you a couple examples because, you know, it's very hard to put like a theoretical banner on this. Mm-hmm. One example is automotive companies, people walking into dealerships, and the conversations are changing from me talking to a person who's selling me something in front of a vehicle to technology and large format displays that just update the entire environment in that store location. There is videos, there is product configuration, so to speak, and there's all kinds of interactive things that allow a customer to take their buying journey at their pace with interactive tools rather than what used to be in the past, a relatively scripted and a human kind of an experience. So does that actually elevate the brand of any car company? Insert name here. It absolutely does. And we see a lot of automotive companies doing this. And we probably engaged with most of the big brands in the auto space. So that's an example. Furniture comes to mind as another example. Most of the times you buy furniture, you don't expect to really, you know, pick it up and put it in your shopping bag and take it home. You spend a lot, considerable amount of time customizing, configuring, and that is so perfect for a large format touchscreen. So we have several customers in the furniture space that do either completely self-serve or assisted. So a sales associate helping you configure, whether it's closets or sofas or what have you. So those are some of the examples of what large format touchscreens go into in terms of retail applications.
Yeah, I mean, furniture is a great example. And I went through this process about a year ago when we moved and bought a new house and new furniture. And, you know, you're looking at a couch and they're showing you this little 8-inch by 8-inch fabric swatch and saying it could look like this. And, you know, I'm looking at it going, well, I have no idea what that would look like on a big ass couch. So if you could actually view it on a 70-inch screen, then you're getting somewhere.
Yeah. If you take an example of California closets, they're using 55 and 42-inch devices to design and configure your space. I don't know if you saw that when you stopped by our booth, but we've had that example often with California closets personnel as well. We invited to kind of speak to that application. Did you get a chance to see that? Or?
Oh, I saw a lot of stuff. I'm sure I did, but there were a lot of things in that booth going on.
Yeah, so this is a great example, right? So it's such useful, yet an example that helps them create a dynamic brand language in the space. So this is where they are absolutely delighted with the results, but also with how the communication between them and their customer is just taken leaps ahead in terms of that interaction.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
So how does Elo sort of distinguish itself from the companies out there that sell touch overlays, touch surrounds, IR surrounds, and that sort of thing? Those guys are kind of after-the-fact products that would attach to conventional displays, whereas you guys are all about fully evolved, integrated units, right? Like Elo doesn't sell overlays, right?
No, we don't. And yeah, we made fully factory integrated units. In fact, 10 years ago, when we started our large format business, I think we were the industry's first kind of fully integrated factory units. So you're absolutely right about that. You know, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and what's the benefit there? What's the distinction there? Like, why would that be better than having an overlay?
Well, really three benefits. So number one, a fully integrated system ends up being from a form factor standpoint, really the thinnest you can get. So you'll find that for a commercial grade display, which is built for that longevity, Elo has some of the thinnest touchscreens in the world. In fact, we started calling them 70-inch tablets because that's what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
Is they look like tablets. They don't look large, and the thickness is really some of the best in the industry. So that's the first thing. It just looks fantastic when it's fully integrated, and it looks like a tablet on a wall, very thin and good aesthetics. Mm-hmm. The second thing is there's a cost advantage to this, because doing oftentimes aftermarket integration adds a lot of cost, and I would say adds a lot of nearshore costs, which means sometimes you also have to take delays as you get parts or you find a location where you act essentially partially disassembling and then putting in a frame, which is often how they do this. So that's the second thing. And the third thing is reliability. Elo has always been known for durable, reliable devices, and the large format devices that we've created that are fully integrated, they're just incredibly reliable and durable. The glass toughness and strength and the overall life of products, often these are made in a way that they don't require cooling. So that drives reliability up as well, because if you have mechanical parts and things like that. So overall, I think it's a cost competitive, aesthetic, and highly reliable is what is the result.
Mm-hmm.
We have a frame competitors, but we also have some competitors that are starting to now do, as the market grows, a fully integrated touchscreen. So that I think answers in itself the market preference here.
One of the things that struck me, I did an updated report about system-on-chip displays and worked with the guys from the Czech Republic, Synergy OS, who did some benchmark testing. And one of the things that came out of it that I found quite interesting was the most powerful, best-rated SoC displays were Elos, because you were using Android 7. And I guess you can kind of curate and handpick your processors as opposed to using processors that maybe were also used for smart TVs and everything else in other sectors of another company's business.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So two reasons there. We don't have a TV business to pick an architecture for.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one, right? And number two, we are always going after interactive applications, which means that it's a requirement to have a performance that allows fluid interactivity. So those are the reasons why we chose a relatively high performance mobile processor in our products. And when we were talking to the Synergy OS guys, they reached out to us saying, hey, we're kind of doing some benchmarking. We find your products are pretty, pretty unique and powerful. And it's like, it's the design point. We don't have a consumer business that we leverage off of. Our primary business is interactive for enterprise and business markets. And that's our focus.
Interactive has more overhead, I gather, is what you're saying, that it just needs more horsepower under the hood.
Absolutely does, because if you have someone coming up and touching and that's driving an interface that's not a video or a pre-programmed set of visuals, so that means you need onboard processing and onboard graphics that far exceeds what a smart TV can do.
Right. And one of your colleagues who was walking me around the booth said some of the larger form factor SoC displays that you have, which had obviously touch overlays, were being purchased by companies who wanted that horsepower but didn't really need the interactive, which I thought was a pretty good endorsement.
Yeah. And you know, there's another reason people are buying touchscreen enabled displays, and that's because we put a sheet of glass in front of the display that's actually pretty tough. And So this makes the display durable. So we have got customers that do that as well. Say, hey, listen, this is just so much more robust. So maybe I'll need the touchscreen later, but for just the robustness and the compute, I would love to use these products instead of just a non-interactive display, which is great for us. It's an unintended consequence of building durable and high-performance devices, I think, but we love it.
One of the things that I know that you guys have been pushing and promoting in the last little bit has been ELOview, which I know something about, but maybe the best thing to do is you've explained to me what on earth is ELOview.
So I'd love to do that. So, you know, ELOview is a SaaS, software as a service platform that allows customers to provision, secure, and manage devices. So often in collaboration with our software partners that do the actual content and content management portion, EloView will deliver some automation layers that really make a network of displays, large or small, a lot more manageable than it has traditionally been. You know, we made EloView because actually we kind of started going down the path of mobile architecture or Android architecture. And we realized that Android was so great in terms of the commonality of customer experience, in terms of cost, in terms of the developer ecosystem, all these great things about bringing mobile architecture into large format displays or displays that are fixed in point of sale or kiosk applications. But as we started to do that, we quickly realized, well, wait, this is a tablet operating system. It's really not made for managing business devices. So we started investing in creating a set of tools that will allow us to do that. Windows and Linux have been in that space for a long time as business operating systems, but Android is relatively new in comparison. So EloView was really born out of that idea that, hey, Android has all this promise for business devices, but in order to realize that, there needs to be a set of tools that our customers or our partners would use to automate provisioning, device management, security of kiosk mode, OS updates, and things that all large networks and enterprises would need, and just makes the devices friendlier and more manageable. So when our software vendor partners that do content management systems look at an Elo device, they can take advantage of all these layers of technology, and they have to do less to support the device and spend less. And that's what EloView does. Does that give you a good starting sense of
the tool? If I'm a CMS company and I've got all of the capabilities of scheduling content and so on, I may have some device management, but what you're saying is with EloView, there's a whole bunch that their software developers don't have to write, that you have an API that's just going to kind of cover off all of the exotic management, like uploading new APKs for Android itself or whatever.
Yeah. So one example is upgrading the Android OS on the device, right? If you have a tablet or if you have an iPhone, every now and then you get a little window that says new version is available. Do you want to install it now, later, whatever?
And it's terrifying to think about doing it, right?
Exactly. But think about now, you have 500 or maybe 5,000 displays in the field, and they're going to pop up that message in front of your customers. How do you manage that? Well, with EloView, you can actually control the version when you want to install it, and you can do it right there on the interface, the EloView console, or you can do it through the API, kind of your customer choice based on the model. And that message, that pop-up message that Android will typically show on a tablet, that never appears in front of a customer or in front of a device. The device can update silently in the background. So this is an example of a capability that would be incredibly expensive for every content management system provider to build because it's so hardware-centric. The OS update for a specific set of hardware is so connected to that piece of hardware that it should be the OEMs who do it. And so we did it, and we're working with many, many ISVs today that are leveraging EloView through APIs, and we're working with some integrators who kind of use it as a support portal. We've got end users using it. So there's so many different models that we've deployed this product in. It's extremely modular. As you know, we talk about the signage ecosystem being a very partner and solution creation kind of focused ecosystem. So the product's very modular in terms of the way we approach and sell it.
And what are the commercial aspects of that? Is it something that's just bundled in and comes when you buy a Elo display, or is it an upcharge fee?
No, it's a separate product. So you have the Elo device that you can buy, and that's a separate decision from how you plan to manage the device. And we have, so it's a separate fee. We have multiple tiers in terms of functionality and volume and so on. So it's a separate service business, if you will.
Right. So you're going to look at this and make a business decision that, okay, I could write this on my own, but it's going to take me 6 months and a whole bunch of money, or I can subscribe to this and make my life right. a lot simpler.
Yeah. Most enterprises are making that decision, and most ISVs are too. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the whole managed services thing and the full service provider thing is a big deal these days, because companies just say, you know what, if I can get somebody else to do this for me, I'm a happy fella.
Yeah. And, you know, for us, it's really about providing the tools for our integrators, partners to leverage to the extent they want to. So pretty much every one of our integrator partners has a different model that they use this tool in. And that's so nice about being modular, which is, I think, different from the typical consumer model where SaaS model where here's the product and it's kind of monolithic. HeloVue is extremely modular.
Mm-hmm. So last question, if you can just give away all our trade secrets and tell me what's coming up in the next 6 to 12 months for Elo.
Well, I'll share a few things, but not give away all trade secrets.
No, you'd like to stay employed, I'm sure.
Exactly. And so a couple things we're working on is HeloVue is going to have a lot of focus in terms of our feature updates. So some of the things we're working on in HeloVue have to do with how do enterprises and some of our larger system integrators manage multiple implementations? So helping our resellers and our software partners to manage a large set of customers within our HeloVue environment. So a lot of effort going into kind of this enterprise focus in HeloVue. On the hardware side, I think you'll see in the next, 10 or so months, some really new exciting devices coming out that have to do with Android and the next versions of Android and the next version of hardware. We are gearing up for a product launch at Infocom as well. So stay tuned, and we'll probably do a briefing prior to Infocom with respect to our new offerings at Infocom. So that's, not quite 6 weeks, but we'll definitely see you there. Looking forward to that.
It's coming on fast. All right, Neeraj, thank you very much for taking some time with me.
Thank you so much, Dave. Appreciate the time and some great questions. Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.